Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a recent study from Oxford University says that in the next 20 years, nearly half of all jobs will likely be eliminated by technology. It's a startling number and points to a grim future that we in this country may not be ready for. But let's face it, almost every time this story is told, it seems like a dystopian futuristic tale. But the future is the present. The immediacy and our lack of awareness led a venture capitalist, Art Bilger, to create Working Nation. It's a news operation telling stories of the future of work, or the lack thereof. The site is hiring amazing journalists to tell these stories, including my guest tonight, Joan Lynch, Chief Content and Programming Officer. Lynch has spent her career in media, including serving as VP and Executive Producer of Content for ESPN. She oversaw the 30 for 30 documentary series when she was there. She has two Peabodys. And also Ramona Schindelheim, the Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a former financial journalist who has won numerous awards in her time, working for the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, ABC News. She also has two Peabodys, four Peabodys in this conversation, and I welcome you both to Extension 720. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's get right into this. Where does this come from, this idea of using stories and storytelling to attack or take on this issue that I don't think a lot of Americans are paying attention to?
You know, when Art Bilger decided that he wanted to attack this, he at first thought that he wanted to do a documentary and then thought it might be a little too dark and too scary and he could scare the crap out of people in 40 minutes, but he couldn't do much about talking about the solutions. And so he and I went back and forth, and what we talked about was we needed to be talking about it every single day. We needed to bring in journalists. It was during the election year that as we were going around the country, and we recognized both in the debates and throughout the election, people were talking about jobs, but really just unemployment numbers or jobs created. Right. But they weren't really digging any deeper, and they certainly were not talking about solutions for the future.
Yeah, and I think the good part about storytelling is you know, tell a story, you connect with people, show them examples of how it's affecting their lives. And as Joan just said, you know, you could scare people and say, oh, you know, the robots are going to take your job. But if you tell them a story about programs that are going to help train them, you're going to show them how robots aren't going to take their jobs. You're going to be working alongside them. They're going to take over some of the mundane things that you do. We already see that, you know, in many factories and that, where they take over the mundane jobs. But there's a need for your brain. There's a need for your knowledge, your new technical skills that you can get. So the storytelling allows us to help prepare people.
It's important, too, because we've seen traditional media almost provide the story as a kicker story. When one of the colleges or universities comes up with a robot that has legs or can talk or do anything, it becomes, oh, look at this. But it doesn't necessarily, either it's ringing a bell, being very alarmist, or it's just sort of
they're not
telling the whole story.
Right. I saw this presentation about 2 years ago at the Recode conference, and it was Mary Meeker, who's a famous analyst, and she put up all these headlines from the beginning of 1900s from the newspapers. So about every 15 or 20 years, there's a headline that says robots are going to take your jobs.
Right, right.
So the story has been there. And as a journalist and as someone who has worked in local and national news, that gets people's attention when you say that. But I think it does a disservice to people. You can get that. You can ring that bell, but you need to tell them why you're ringing the bell and what they can do about it.
It's a reading the stuff and getting ready for this. You recognize that the future is now. That some of those stories that have been told in the past are about we don't know what the date's going to be. But as you see, even as we talk about what you might call the mundane jobs, it's being done. It's actually happening as we speak on the radio right now.
It is. And from a Working Nation perspective, we feel like we need to put the human face and the name on it, because we believe that your average American is looking at these numbers and looking at the robot stories and thinking, that could be me, and what do I do now? In fact, we did a piece of content a couple of years ago called The Table, where we got CEOs and thought leaders together at a table to talk about this topic. But before we started the conversation, we showed them a short documentary about two specific people at the carrier company down in Indianapolis. And their body language changed. And these are people used to talking about this topic at a high level. All of a sudden, they were leaning into the table and talking to each other and referring to those two workers by name and problem solving instead of throwing out data or just say, you know, being on a panel, which we love these conversations and people problem solving. They're talking about human beings, and we believe that's what we need to do more of in this country.
It seems to me that, you know, this conversation we're having tonight is really about the future of work. it gets boiled down as when it comes to politics and when it comes to media in a lot of ways. But in politics, you see it where it's just about can you get more jobs or can you fill more jobs? And you don't necessarily know, is the CEO in the corporation trying to take away a job? Or is that just the way that the world is going and they don't really have control over it? There's a lot of unanswered questions about what the future of work is.
I'd push back on that first number that you were talking about because there's been a lot of studies. And one that I think is probably more accurate is there'll be jobs that go away. There's one study that said 13% of the jobs that exist today won't exist in 20 years. And then there'll be another 13% that don't exist today, will exist in 20 years. And those in the middle are going to be enhanced. They're going to be changed. We talked already about how automation is changing the jobs. That's what we're trying to tell people. The companies, to get to your point, the companies that are looking at that and looking to the future, they're already figuring out ways to reskill. People are working, companies are working with community colleges mm-hmm. or local leaders. And we always say, all jobs are local
right.
because your company is in your community. And if they want to figure out how to keep those jobs filled, how to be successful in the future, they have to start thinking about it now. And there are plenty that are doing that.
I think it was the employment gap or this idea that what we're really seeing when it comes to the future of work is that the skills that are necessary are not being taught, or people just don't have them. They have to retrain themselves. Is that something that we're equipped as a country to recognize? Are we recognizing, you know what, let's change it up. We have to all come together and do this, whether it be through government programs or whether it be for just, you know, the private sector. But is that where we're at, where we just have to kind of recognize that our future depends on how we can adapt?
Yeah. And as Ramona was saying, I think we're especially at that local level. And we've seen some really great examples of where local communities have responded to a need. We did a piece about Tri-C Community College out in Cleveland, and they were recognizing that their first responders were retiring and aging out. And longevity is something that we talk about a lot at Working mm-hmm. Nation, which I don't think most of the media talks about when they talk about jobs. We're just staying in the workforce longer. We either choose to or...
Yes, people are 79-year-old is now the average age of somebody dying.
Yeah.
So people are working yeah. those extra 14, 15 years that they thought they were going to be retired.
But Tri-C realized, okay, we're not... that both police and firemen are aging out. And they partnered with the bank, Key Bank, and the local community, the fire department, the police department, to train the workforce that they needed. And other communities have since reached out to us and said, oh, we have the same problem, mm-hmm. but we just didn't know that we needed to create this local solution, and we can. So one of the things that we love about the stories we're telling is it's sort of a roadmap for other communities in terms of figuring out how to have the skills necessary for the jobs in your local area.
Yeah.
I also think that there are programs out there that people are just not aware of. Mm-hmm. So here in Illinois, in Schaumburg, is Zurich Insurance Company. They have an apprenticeship program where they pay you. You're a paid worker, but they pay you to go to school to learn the tech skills that you need, and you have a job at the end of 2 years. I don't know if anybody out there knows that. There may be a handful of people.
It comes down to whether yeah. or not that is a sustainable model. You'll see all companies just kind of adapt that. That'll become yeah. what we know work is, that you mm-hmm. also have to retrain yourself every 2-3 yeah. years.
And it's a good question that we have a lot internally about whose responsibility is it to train
yeah.
workers. So is it the responsibility of colleges or universities? You know, a lot of CEOs, I think Gallup did a poll about CEOs saying the workforce coming out of school are not prepared for the jobs, whereas the colleges were polled and they're saying our kids and adults coming out of school are prepared for the job. And it's a giant discrepancy between the numbers on the poll.
I'll bet.
But whose responsibility is that? We talk about that a lot with the military as well, because we talk about veterans and jobs. And it's a very clear way for us to say, okay, you've spent 2 to 20 years in the military. Is it their job to train them for what the jobs that are out there? Not really. But is that the same conversation that you're having with colleges and community colleges and certification
right.
programs?
And with college being so expensive, people are looking for alternatives. You know, the debt... You know, I mean, I don't know what the number is, the billions, of course, yeah. but so what, you know, if you're not being prepared in a 4-year school, is it worth the money? Is the return on investment? That's a question we talk to a lot of education
yeah.
people about as well.
We're talking about the future of work. Working Nation, workingnation.com is the website. Joan Lynch is the Chief Content and Programming Officer for Work Nation, and Ramona Schindelheim is the Editor-in-Chief. You can, like I said, workingnation.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Joan Lynch and Ramona Schindelheim are here. They are with Working Nation, workingnation.com, and really talking about the future of work and how we're seeing that the future is now when it comes to automation and job loss and just maybe the evolving nature of what a job is. And we've had conversations on this program where we get philosophical about what work means to a human being or what it means to a community. And that has to factor in here. It can't just be retrain and we'll get you a new job. There's a lot that goes into what it means to be a person when it comes to work.
Yeah, right now I'm the editor-in-chief and I've done financial news for a long time. So data is something that I use a lot. But it's important if you look at the context of what I'm saying. So 7 million open jobs out there, 7.2 million. That's open jobs where employers say they cannot find the right people who are skilled. There are 6 million unemployed people looking for work. There's 1.5 million people who are underemployed. Maybe they're working two jobs because they're trying to make ends meet. But the mismatch there is that people don't have the right skills. And when we've talked about this too, you know, there's a lot of things that we talk about, not just numbers. The feeling of a purpose in somebody's life. We just did a round table a couple of months ago with a bunch of religious leaders, and Rabbi David Wolpe is a pretty well-known rabbi in Los Angeles in particular, but pretty well-known around the world. And he said, what is the first question you ask somebody when you meet them? It's not, where do you live, or how many, are you married? It's, what do you do for a living?
What do you do, right, mm-hmm. right.
So if you're not able to say something with pride or a sense of satisfaction, that does affect you. So it is important. One of the underlying things that we talk about is not just making sure everybody has a job, but it's a good job. It's a good middle-class job.
One of the most interesting things I've heard in the 4.5 years since we started Working Nation is people have been researching how people come back from trauma and how long it takes for you to come mm-hmm. back from trauma. So it could be an illness, a death in the family, a divorce. And the one that I was told that was the hardest to track was long-term unemployment. And if you think about that, it does make sense, and it still gives me chills. You know, people aren't bringing things to your house necessarily every day or asking you how you are, and it's an awkward situation, and it's humbling.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of issues around this country now that we say almost every job, every story is a job story. You know, the situation with opioids in this country and violence and a lot of different things can be tied back to not having exactly what you talked about, the purpose, having a job, having somewhere to go. We see it happening internationally in a lot of countries that have very high unemployment. It's concerning in this country as it could get higher.
We find ourselves, and it's this American dream, this concept that we go to, you know, higher education. We do all the right things. We do 4-year college and university, find ourselves in debt, but we get out and we get a good job. We start families and the white picket fence and everything in between, right? That's right. The old American dream. And you've seen over time, a generation to generation, the parameters change. As we get to 2020 and new generations continue to populate the workforce, they're not thinking that way. They're thinking in different ways completely. So is there a way that just by basic, I don't know if there's the right word, evolution, that you'll see younger people who start to enter the workforce with different expectations or different understandings of what they need to learn, the skills they need to get us out of, you know, what we used to know as the American dream?
There's this idea out there of lifelong learning that you don't just... You know, before it was you went to school, then you worked, and then you retired. That can't work anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. You need to keep learning. So you have a 40-year-old who's been doing a job for 20 years. They have to retrain. They have to retrain so they can keep working now until, you know, past 65. But I think the kids that are coming out with the idea of college now, if they're going to college, you know, maybe they're going to community college, maybe they're doing a specialty program where they're just learning one skill, but they're going to have to keep learning. And I think they understand that. Austin Goolsbee, we were talking to him this morning, mm-hmm. the economist, University of Chicago, he was saying 10 jobs in a lifetime, but 10 good jobs, you know, in a lifetime, people are going to probably have to mm-hmm. have to be prepared for. So you can't just walk out and go, I'm done learning.
Yeah. It's a great way to rethink it, though, when you think 10 jobs and not necessarily as like a list, But just saying that's the American dream. You're going to get 10 good jobs. Yeah.
It's interesting from being from a media perspective. I think it's a great opportunity for local media, for radio, for others, because these solutions and these different types of jobs are often local. And so we tell stories. We have a series called I Want That Job. And honestly, I'm shocked at how well it's doing, because we're just pointing out which jobs are out there and what the growth is. And we won't point out a job unless we think that there's over 7% growth in the next few years. But we just did a piece on a wind turbine mechanic. 96% growth rate in the next 8 years. Mm. You know, and so
the demand is crazy.
The demand is crazy. There's also, for folks that don't necessarily want to take on the debt or go to a four-year school, somebody that might say, hey, you know what, I'm really passionate about the environment. You know, there's a lot of jobs that you could go into that are really interesting, and there is room for growth.
Okay, so both of you are award-winning journalists, and you work in a field that has seen a lot of turnover and attrition and layoffs and corporatizing of the work. Because I think of a lot of people in that field, in media, have gone in, they've done the retrain, they get a new job, and then the corporation says, you know, we need to take 10% off the top if we're going to make waves, and they get laid off. And we see this not just in media, in all sorts of. So how do you find how do you talk to each other when the corporate side, which is all about making money, doesn't have the same value on jobs as the people who are trying to keep or retrain themselves for jobs?
You know, I just heard this from in Kansas City. Do you know the company Hallmark? It makes cards. They laid off a couple of years ago a huge number of people. Cut back, you know, and I don't know how they're filling, you know, all the card orders out there. Maybe everything's the e-cards now, so you have to learn to do that. But what happened there was all those artists started their own businesses. They became entrepreneurs. And so there's a thriving art community in Kansas City now because of it. So entrepreneurship is something to look at. I mean, there's a need. Everybody's creating. You can create your own business. And it's not just for millennials. Mm. The average age for an entrepreneur is 40 years old. Because when you're 20, you may be able to convince somebody something. Mm-hmm. But 40, you have some experience behind you. You have some skills that you have built. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's horrible when people get laid off. But I urge people to think, what can I do? I mean, I've reinvented myself a million times. Always as a writer or a journalist, but in different ways. I learned how to edit. I learned how to, you know, do all the things you need to do in a newsroom now. But I'm kind of being an entrepreneur now with Working Nation. So.
It makes me think of I had an econ professor in college, and I went to Columbia College. It's an art school. Like, one of the things you had to take was like the economics class. And I remember he said, and it was the first day, first day of class, and he'd go around to each person in his class, what do you want to be? What are you doing in school? And they say, an actor. And he'd say, no, you don't. You want to own an actor's studio. Mm-hmm. He'd say the same thing to me. What do you want to do? I want to be in radio. Well, no, you want to own a radio station, because that's the system we work in. If you're going to get ahead, you need to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. It doesn't work any other way. And it's interesting to think that, you know, 25 years ago when I was told that, to what you're just saying now, that there is some truth that the only way to protect yourself in a world where automation other places is to think about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, my daughter just graduated from UCLA with a theater degree. The last year, the whole, you know, each semester they did the business of being an actor and the business of being a writer, the business of being a producer, because they wanted you to understand that if you are your own business, you are your own entrepreneur. But again, like in Hallmark, those people, they started art galleries. There's ways to take your skills and do something with them and not have to depend on that corporate structure where you may get laid off because, you know, they miss their earnings by a penny.
So my final question for you guys just is really about the government portion of this, because it seems that whether it be political reporting or candidates or lawmakers, they're really twisting the numbers, whether it's unemployment numbers or employment numbers or who's hiring, who's not. Everything in between seems to be, they made politics out of jobs.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is, that are we going to need something not unlike what we saw with the Green New Deal or even the New Deal back in Roosevelt's time? Some sort of job forward-thinking approach from the United States government that is going to tackle the issues that you're talking about to try and reconcile some of these numbers?
It's interesting. One of the folks that works with us, Richard Ramirez, he said to me about 3 or 4 years ago when we were first really building this out, we need a Marshall Plan. We need the new Marshall Plan for jobs. And now, I think in Minnesota or
Michigan,
yeah. It's actually how they refer to it.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying whether or not that was original, but you're absolutely right. I think that what we're talking about, though, is that the local leaders are the ones that are going to make this change. We've both spent enough time in Washington and in network news covering elections to know that it is the local solutions that are going to really help with this problem. But also, as we go into an election year with the White House at stake, that Americans know that the White House is not going to change their job situation. It's going to be right. What's going on. It's going to be the corporate leaders, the educators, the not-for-profits. Mm-hmm. State and local leaders.
Because yeah. They can enact the programs. I mean, D.C. is not going to be able to do a program that fits. It's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. So, again, what goes on in your community is different. You have different companies there. You have different populations there. So you do need that local solutions.
We've been spending a lot of time with the National Governors yeah. Association and a lot of governors, and each state has different problems, and they've been talking to us about this is how many jobs we have in our state. How do we tell people that they exist? How do we tell people
right.
what skills
right.
they
right.
need? Such an interesting perspective from us, because we would think that people would know that. But apparently not.
Well, great topics, great stories, and great storytelling on workingnation.com. You can check it out. Joan Lynch is the Chief Content and Programming Officer for Working Nation. And Ramona Schindelheim, who is from the Chicago area.
Woo-hoo!
Used
Aurora.
To work in,
Aurora
in Chicago. Aurora East.
DePaul.
She's the Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. And like I said, workingnation.com. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this.
Thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.